Okay, I think it's time to get started. It's 6 p.m. in Israel, and that's where we're centered, Ki Mitzion, Teitse Torah. And it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Israel for part two of this year. The sources were sent out earlier in the email. Rabbi Israel will post them so we can follow along. And four stories of forgiveness in the Talmud, I think we're going to focus on today. Rabbi Israel, it's all yours.
Okay, so shalom everybody. In a certain way, this shiur maybe should be given towards Erev Yom Kippur, because what we're going to talk about today is the complicated process of asking people for forgiveness in advance of Yom Kippur. However, I have to say, by the time we get to the end of the class, you'll realize how complicated this process is. And realize that really there is no time like the present, because it is a difficult process. Maybe it's good I'm giving this or a week before Rosh Hashanah and over 2 weeks before Yom Kippur, because we're going to talk today about what I might call the art of forgiveness. It's not so easy to forgive. It's not so easy to approach somebody to ask them for forgiveness, and because it is such a complicated process. That's why we're going to talk about what we're saying today. And let me maybe begin with an anecdote, which is in a book, a famous book by Simon Wiesenthal, The Sunflower. Maybe some of you have seen the book. And to cut a very, very long story short, Simon Wiesenthal, who went through the Shoah, lost 89 of his relatives there, saw his own mother being put onto one of those terrible cattle trucks, found himself one day confronted by a dying Nazi who asked him and confessed all of his sins, confessed everything he'd done, the Jews that he killed. And this man was dying, was wrapped up in bandages and was dying. And he said, bring me a Jew, because I would like to ask for forgiveness. And the story goes that he hears the entire story and he doesn't respond. He says, he just doesn't say a word. And in this book, The Sunflower, Simon Wiesenthal throws out the question to a whole bunch of theologians, Jewish theologians, Christian theologians, and says, should I have forgiven him? On behalf of the Jewish people, should I have forgiven him? Did I have the right to forgive him? Was he right to ask? And it's interesting because all the Jews say he was right to remain silent. He was right not to forgive. And the Christians are very into this idea of forgiveness. He should have forgiven. Maybe I'll ask the question, why did the Nazi, before he died, want to ask for forgiveness? What was he trying to achieve? Obviously, he couldn't bring the people back to life. What was the Nazi trying to achieve by asking for this act of forgiveness? Let me maybe just say, for the purpose of this class, what I'm going to be using is the chat. So if anybody would like to contribute, I don't think we're a large forum, and I don't think we have the ability to necessarily talk to one another, but I will say that people are welcome to put things in the chat. And we have this idea that so people have Susanna Levine has written he wants to get rid of his guilty conscience, perhaps. In other words, sometimes an argument sits on us and we want to get rid of it in some way. Maybe he was afraid, as Carol says, of some sort of eternal hell. But I see that Ruth is bringing the story of Yosef, right? The story of Yosef. And here, maybe let me get to the amazing story of Yosef. I should have possibly put this on the sheet, but let me give you the famous story. We all remember what the brothers did to Yosef. They sent him down to Egypt and led to 22 years where he was separated from his family. And certainly in those moments when he was in the pit, they showed absolute no pity, right? To use a pun, no pity whatsoever, and sent him into slavery. He could have died there. Now, this is fascinating because at the time he tells them, I am Yosef, and they're all ashamed. And he says, don't worry, God sent me down to it's part of God's plan. But 17 years later, when their father passes away, they again come to Yosef and they say to him, they fling themselves down and they say, we're sorry. Okay, we sold you to slavery. We're guilty. Please have mercy on us. And you know what Yosef says again? Yosef says, you think I'm instead of God? You might have thought it was for the bad, but Hashem thought it was for the good. Now, once again, they come and they apologize. Did they get the apology they wanted? Did they get the appeasement that they wanted? Did they want Yosef to hug them and say, it's okay? In a way, he said that it's okay. He said, this is God's plan. But he didn't say the one word which maybe they wanted to hear. They didn't hear, I forgive you. They didn't hear, you know, I'm not angry with you anymore. All they heard was, it's God's plan. God had a plan. And there's a very interesting dynamic going on. I don't know. I'm enjoying this audience in front of me. I can see the faces in front of me. And I can see that not every one of you is an 18-year-old. Just a year or two more than 18. Okay? Why am I saying that? Because the share that I'm going to give today, I gave it once in Pardes, where I teach, where the average age of the classroom was probably 70 years old. Let's put it that way. And I went from my 12 o'clock class at Pardes to my 3 o'clock class at Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi, where all of my students, the average age is not 70 years old, but it's 18 years old. And what was amazing about this shiur, and this shiur is all about apologies and accepting apologies, is that my 70-year-olds had so much to say, and my 18-year-olds had nothing to say. Because let's face it, how much life experience, how many mistakes, how many people have the 18-year-olds offended? But the 70-year-olds, we've all throughout life sometimes made certain mistakes. We've fallen out with people. We've had a row at work. Maybe we've had a row at home. Some people have got divorced. Some people have offended a family member, whoever it might be. Maybe they've had a bust up in shul with somebody. And they've actually got a history to all of this. And we realize that sometimes we've made mistakes and we want to apologize. We want to apologize. We want to move forward. And maybe we've been offended and we sit with the insult for years and years and years that somebody has insulted us. And we need to confront other people about our insult. And how do we do that? How do we move forward? And as we spoke in last week's class, Yom Kippur is about the Jewish people and God moving forward. Now I want to reduce this to the individual resolution. How do we move forward? And I'm going to share my sheet. And here we go. One minute. No, I've done that wrong. Hold on a second. Sorry. Ah, here it is. Share screen. Okay. So let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can do with this source sheet. Let's read a little bit together. Averot sheben adam lemakom yom ha-kippurim mechaper. If you've offended against God, if you've done a sin, if I didn't daven Maariv one night, or I didn't eat kosher, or what have you, so Yom Kippur acts as an atonement. However, Averot shebein adam lechaveiro, but if you've offended against another person, ein Yom Kippurim v'chaper. Yom Kippur can't achieve that forgiveness ad shiratzeh et chaveiro, until you make up with your friend, or with maybe they're not your friend anymore, but until you come to some sense of reconciliation. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah learns this from a pasuk. It says, "Mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru." So, from all your sins before God, titaru. Averot sheben adam lamakom, the sins which are before God, yom kippurim lechaper. Averot sheben adam lechavero, ein yom kippurim lechaper, achirat zed chavero. So you have to appease your friend. Okay, so this is it. We've got to go and make up with people. Seems simple. Let's keep going. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. I'm reading here where it says Talmud 87a. Talmud 87a. I hope people can. Rabbi Isaac said. Okay. Rabbi Isaac said. Let's make sure. Yeah, we're good. Rabbi Isaac said. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Kol hamaknitet chavero afilu bidvarim sarich lefaisel. If you angered somebody, you offended somebody, even if it was a verbal dispute, even if I didn't steal from you, or I didn't, you know, I don't know, crash my car into you, Sarich lefaiso, you need to make up with him. Shine emar, and now they quote from Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 6. Okay, Mishlei. The Hebrew is, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to scroll down, and we're going to look at the pasuk properly. Bni imarav tilariecha takatil azar kapecha no kashta beimreficha nil kalta beimreficha. My son, if you have become a guarantor for your fellow, a surety for your fellow, if you've given your hand for another, you've been trapped by the words of your mouth. You've been snared by the words of your mouth. Do this then, my son, to extricate yourself. If you've come into the power of your fellow, go grovel and badger your fellow. Give your eyes no sleep, your pupils no slumber. Save yourself like a deer out of the hand of a hunter, like a bird out of the hand of a fowler. This is a fascinating verse here in Mishlei, which the Gemara is using. The Gemara seems to be talking about a situation in which I've upset somebody. So why does it say that I've, here it uses the word that I'm an arev, which usually is a financial arrangement where I agree to secure a loan for somebody else. Or takata lazar kapecha, you've given your hand, you've shaken hand on a business deal. You've been trapped by the words of your mouth. If I offended you, who am I trapped? How am I trapped? It says, save yourself like a deer out of the hand of the hunter, right? We have this sense of being trapped here. What, in what way are, do we think that somebody might feel trapped if they've offended somebody? So it's a difficult question. I admit it's a difficult question. And I'll maybe say this. Sometimes I think that if I'm offended somebody, right, I've upset them, right? And I have to make, you know, I have to make them feel good. In other words, we've got a sort of an aggressor, and we've got a victim. I yelled at somebody inappropriately. I yelled at my kids because I was too tired, right? And I've upset them. So now I'm the aggressor and they're the victim, okay? But what's happening once my kid storms out of the house, right? And is furious and say, Abba, I hate it when you talk to me like that, right? And then what happens, right? How am I feeling? I've now become trapped. I become trapped because I, as the aggressor, am now caught. Can I apologize? But even if I apologize, will they in some way receive me back? Will my child look me in the face? Okay. Will they receive? I am, it says, save yourself like a deer out of the hand of the hunter, like a bird out of the hand of the fowler. Right. I can try and apologize. I can try and apologize once or twice or the other, but I'm sitting here with the guilt of my actions, right? So what the Gemara is saying is, it's interesting. We might think that we have an aggressor and a victim, but in a way we have two people who are sitting there upset, because that's what happens in interhuman relationships, unless you're a really, really, you know, I don't know, emotionally deaf person. But usually if you're aware, you've offended somebody, certainly somebody you care about, right? And you feel a need to apologize. Both of you are caught in a web. And it's fascinating how in different cultures, maybe I'll just mention that in the Greek culture, forgiveness was all about releasing yourself from the guilt, right? You know, The reason why you forgave somebody else was because you, as you know, you were somehow the victim who forgives. Why should you forgive? Because you don't want to be sitting there in this web of anger, in this web of insult. And that's what's happening. Okay? So this is back to, we're going to keep going with the theory, and then we're going to go into a few stories which are going to show how complicated this is. And let's take a look. And the stories, I'm really going to ask for your participation, and we'll see what we can do. How are you meant to apologize? I'm reading Rav Chista here, where you can see my hand, or in English, it's, there are three bolded points. I'm Rav Chista. Sarich lefai so, b'shalosh shurot shal shalosh shalosh shal shlosha b'nei Adam. So let's say I apologize to you and you won't receive me. I apologize to you, and so he says, what should you do? You should endeavor to pacify him through three groups of three people. That's fascinating. I upset you. I got upset with you in shul, and I don't know, it was your yahrzeit, and I took the amud, and I wouldn't give it to you. I don't know, these things happen, right? Or I don't know, you invited me to your son's wedding, and I didn't invite you to my son's wedding, and you're offended. And you won't, you're really offended. So what do you do? Apparently this, you pacify him through three groups of three people. Interesting what's happening here. What seems to be happening here is that you're involving the community. You're trying to find some sort of mediator. In fact, if you think about it, three groups of three people makes nine. In other words, there are 10 people involved. 10 is a minion. Once you involve 10 people, it's already public. Sometimes you might think that, sometimes you can't solve things one-on-one. If people have ever gone to, I don't know, a therapist for marriage problems, you'll realize that sometimes one person against the other, right? You can't solve your problems. You need somebody on the outside to help you. Sometimes maybe the community can weigh in on somebody and say, you know, you're being a little silly, or tell you that somebody's taken offense. So one technique, apparently, if you can't get through to the person, is to involve the community, to bring in another three groups of three people who will be able to help you to make your way through to that person. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina says, "Kol avakesh matu michavero, al yavakesh menu yoter mishalosh panim, shenemar, ana sana, v'ata sana," etc., etc. Anyone who asks pardon of his neighbor doesn't need to do so more than three times. So, if I've offended you, I come and ask your apology and you say, no, I don't want to talk to you. I come to you again and I say, I don't want to, and you say, you don't want to talk to me. I come to you again, you say, you don't want to talk to me. After three approaches, I am absolved. I've done my duty. This is, again, a fascinating situation. Again, what have we said? I'm the offending party and you are the victim. But in a certain sense, possibly, the victim holds sway over the offender. Why? Because by the very fact that I've come to you to ask you for an apology, I'm feeling bad. What's the victim's best revenge? I won't talk to you. I won't talk to you. I won't talk to you. And now I'm trapped in a cage of my victim. He's getting back at me by not receiving me. And then the cycle continues. The cycle of resentment continues. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina says, you can ask apology three times and then you're absolved. In other words, the victim can't hold the offender in bay. He can't be imprisoned by the offender. So that's a fascinating situation here. And a minute, I can see somebody's writing something here, but I can't see it. What do you do when you don't even know what you did that offended the other person? Okay, a person just stops talking to you. That's a really great question. Maybe we'll raise that in a few minutes. And the last thing, if the person died, he should bring 10 persons and make them stand by the grave and say, I've sinned against the Lord of Israel and I've against this person who I've hurt, and you should apologize by his grave. Okay, now again, what's the purpose? The guy's dead, for goodness sake. Anybody think of a reason why you should apologize by the graveside? Seems a little bizarre. So I can think of one reason for the person who's been, for the victim, for the person who's been offended, and one for the offender, right? Number one, as Molly says here, it's a public apology. If I've offended you and I've had an argument with you, maybe I've even, I don't know, caused you to lose money, right? Imagine, I've caused you to lose money. I slandered your business and your business went into bankruptcy as a result or lost money. And now you're dead and what am I going to do? So if I stand by your grave and, by the way, bring 10 people, then what I'm publicly saying is I was wrong. And at the very, very least, I can clear their name. I can publicly say, you know what? That slander that I did was indeed slander. I libeled you. And I can clear the deck for your reputation. And the other option is exactly what Steve says, right? I'm feeling terrible. The guy died and I didn't have a chance to apologize to him. I can't bring him back from the grave, but at least I can in some way, right, make a public statement. Again, it's this idea you bring 10 people publicly. I turn around and I try and apologize. Maybe the neshama is around the grave. Maybe in some other world they can hear. If I couldn't make amends in life, I can somehow, oh, wow, I love this, inculcate proper behavior for next time, for somebody next time. Very interesting. So let's just quickly summarize what we've done in the theory. This has been the theory part of the shir. The Mishnah says that you can do teshuva for sins between, for religious sins, but for interpersonal sins, you have to go and apologize. And then there are rules of apology, right? Number one, go and apologize. Number two, if you can't, they won't accept you. Take three groups of three people. Number three, the victim can't hold the aggressor in limbo and he has to accept his apology. He's got up to three times to accept his apology. And then the person is absolved of any further apology. And lastly, if the person's dead, right, you can still apologize by taking 10 people to their grave. Now, it seems like this is pretty clear. But here I want to teach you something really amazing. I like Eli Sheva's comment. People are more well-behaved in public, right? The situation is supervised by the group. I think that's very, very true. Many people have spoken about the fact that on the internet, in talkbacks, where people can be anonymous, right? People say the ultimately offensive things that they would never say things to people if they were actually in a group of real people. So I think Eli Sheva's comment is true. So the Gemara continues with four stories, which you'll see at the bottom of page one. And we're going to learn these four stories. And by learning, these four stories literally are there in the Gemara, right? Oh, sorry, there's a mistake here. It says, Yuma Pei Zayin, and in English it says 67, but it's really 87. So please excuse me. It's Yoma 87, little typo there. And we're going to, sometimes happens in the Talmud is they give you the halachic theory, but then they give you stories. And a lot of times we read the stories, especially those of us who learn Daf Yomi, the stories are sort of like, I don't know, light entertainment till we get to the next difficult sugya. And we read through the stories and we're just glad that we get to a Daf with some, you know, agarata, and we don't have to contend with a difficult piece. But the truth is that the stories are always in an interplay with the halacha. So let's read some stories. This is story time, ladies and gentlemen. But we're going to have to weigh in to the stories. So let's read and let's see what we can make of these stories and let's see how we go. Rav Yirmiya offended Rav Abba. Rav Yirmiya havalei miltei l'Rabbi Abba b'hadei. Even by the way, the phrase here is very interesting, okay? Which is Rav Yirmiya, Rabbi Abba had a word with him. In other words, Rabbi Yirmiya had offended Rabbi Abba, but Rabbi Abba is now upset with him, okay? So what did he do? Oh, by the way, let me tell you where this discussion, who I'm drawing on. And this actually comes from I don't know if you can see it, an article from the Jewish Review of Books in fall 2011, an article by Moshe Halbertal. The academic Moshe Halbertal wrote an article about this. He wrote a longer piece about this, a longer 30-page article about this somewhere else. And he's the one who gave me the idea to teach this and to give a to use this as a topic of discussion. So let's take a look here and let's see what we can do. Okay, so let's read the story. Rav Yirmiyah offended Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Yirmiyah went and sat on Rabbi Abba's doorstep, right? He sits there, adasha, on the doorstep of Rabbi Abba. Now, the question is going to be, in a minute, let's just read the story. And at that point, Rabbi Abba's maidservant seemed to have been pouring out the wastewater. Maybe she was cleaning the floor or pouring out the garbage. And some of the water was sprayed on Rabbi Yirmiyah's head. So you sort of have this slapstick situation where Rabbi Abba's maidservant pours out the water and splashes Rabbi Yirmiyah with the smelly water. And what does he say? He says, Asa'uni ka'ashpa, they've made me like refuse. And what does he say? Me'ashpot yarim evyon, may God lift me up from the refuse. Suddenly, and he's sitting on Rabbi Abba's doorstep, right? Shama Rabbi Abba v'nafik la'ape. Suddenly, what does he do? He runs outside and went out to him. La'ape, he actually greets his face. And Rabbi Abba realizes what has happened and says, Hashta tzarichna l'mei pachadatcha. Now, I'm the one who has to come and apologize to you. Dichtiv lechi trapes v'rahav re'echa. As we saw, go grovel and badger your fellow. So let's take this story and ask ourselves the critical question, okay? Why is it, and you're welcome to answer in the chat or whatever it is, Rav Yirmiyah has offended Rabbi Abba. So why is Rabbi Yirmiyah hanging out on Rabbi Abba's doorstep? He's sitting there on the doorstep. Why doesn't he just go up to the door and knock on the door? What's happening? And what happened when Rabbi Abba's maidservant pours out the waste, what is an accident. And he talks about himself. He says, they've made me like garbage. May Hashpot Yarim Evyon. Even a little prayer. May Hashem draw me up from the garbage. So David is saying, and I think this is really great. He says, perhaps he wants to apologize, but he can't summon the nerve. I don't know if you've ever been in this situation. This can sometimes happen when you know you're wrong. It might happen with an argument with a spouse. It might happen with an argument at work where you've, you know, taken a position and you've even maybe held your position for a while, right? And then you realize you're wrong, right? And maybe he's hanging out on the doorstep, as Susanna says, right? Because he's hoping that he's finding it difficult to make the first move. And he's sort of hoping that maybe Rabbi Abba will walk outside. And here, something remarkable happens, right? I mean, he's feeling bad. He wants to find a way to apologize. He doesn't quite know how to do it. And strangely enough, what's going to be a sort of fortuitous coincidence, the maid throws the water on him and he says, I'm garbage, may I spot Yarim Evyon, which is almost like saying, I don't know whether this is sort of a Freudian slip or what have you, but he's sort of saying, I feel like garbage. How was I so insensitive to Rabbi Abba? I feel like garbage. Hashem, help me. Help me to get out of the garbage. Help me to get out of this low place. May Ashpot Yarim Evyon, right? In a way, right? You know, he's saying, I am deserving of this. Oh, interesting. While he's saying, he feels like David HaMelech when Shimei throws stones at him. David HaMelech is leaving Jerusalem in a very low place and Shimei throws stones at him and said, God told him to do that, right? God told him to do that, right? Wow. So at that point, Rabbi Amma, who is the offended one, comes out and he realizes that, Rabbi Yirmiyah's hairs, and he realizes exactly what's happened. He says, oh, I'm so sorry to you. Look at what's happened. Suddenly the dichotomy between offender and victim, aggressor and victim, suddenly reverses. Because the person who was the aggressor before, Rabbi Yirmiyah, and Rabbi Abba was the victim, now Rabbi Yirmiyah has become a victim, right? And he says, now I must appease you. And as it says, like, lechi trapes v'rahav re'echa. In other words, we don't have that stark dichotomy that you're right and I'm wrong. So I think this is a fascinating story, because it shows the hesitancy we have to even begin to approach somebody. We don't know the right words. How can I knock on the door? Maybe he'll tell me to get lost. maybe I won't, he won't receive me nicely, right? And Rav Abba feels guilty for something he didn't do, right? I don't know how deep the guilt is, but you can still say sorry if your maid does something. It's true, maybe it's the maid's fault. But yes, harmony is established here because maybe we're able to sort of blur the lines. And, you know, and here what Moshe Halbertal, Professor Moshe Halbertal says, is that it's very interesting that this is happening on the doorstep. He said, there is the door to forgiveness, but there's always a threshold before the door. I don't think Rabbi Abba ordered his maidservant to throw the water on Rabbi Yirmiyah, right? But what I would say here is that there is a doorstep before every forgiveness. In other words, the question, there's a question about how you forgive people, but there's a question of what's the doorstep to the threshold of forgiveness? Because we all come with a certain attitude. And sometimes, you know, the best situation when you have an argument with somebody you're close to is just to wait an hour and all the emotions to sort of calm a little bit, right? But the question is always going to be, right, will I be received, right? Is the person still deeply offended? How's it going to work? And so let's take a look, right? Interesting, sin crouching at the door with Cain. Maybe we'll relate to that later. Okay, let's take a look here at story number two. Rabbi Zeira, ki havale milta b'hadi inash. Rabbi Zeira, if he had an argument with somebody, okay. I assume these are arguments within the community of rabbis because they seem to be in a bet midrash. When he had an argument with a certain person, he would, and that person was actually the offending party, Rabbi Zeira was the victim here, he would go and study before him and invite himself into his presence so the injurer would come and appease him. Interesting. So Rabbi Zeira was in a situation where somebody had offended him, and what would he do? Maybe he'd go and learn in his Bet Midrash. As David, I think, correctly says, he's creating an opportunity for reconciliation. In other words, he's allowing himself, you know, you might say, right, I'm never going to daven in his shul. I'm never going to be found in his shul again. I remember once my grandfather, I mentioned the shul in Jerusalem, Heichal Shlomo, right? It's the Bet Knesset HaGadol in Yerushalayim. And I mentioned it to my grandfather, who was an old yekka and a very stubborn man. And he said to me, Heichal Shlomo, I'll never step in that shul again. I said to him, what happened? He said, I once went there on a Chol HaMoed, and my grandfather was a yekka, so he put on tefillin in Chol HaMoed. And in Israel, the minhag is not to put on tefillin in Chol HaMoed. He went into the shul on Chol HaMoed. He put on his tefillin and they threw him out the shul. They said, we don't put on tefillin here. Could you leave? And he was so offended, he said, I'm never stepping foot in that shul again. Well, you know, how would the gabba be able to apologize? So in this case, Rabbi Zeira finds a way, right, to be rodef shalom, okay, and finds a way to encounter people, right, to encounter people and to put themselves so at least you can begin a conversation. I wonder, it's interesting, he uses the word chalif v'tani l'kameh. He would pass and teach before him. You know, maybe the person wouldn't approach him the first time, maybe not even the second time, maybe not the third time. He'd sit there learning and wait for the opportunity. I assume Rabbi Zeira was a big rabbi. Maybe the guy would come up to him with a question. Maybe a question would come up and they'd all be discussing. And then he'd turn around to him as he was leaving and say, you know, can we just have a word? As teachers, many of my teachers and I always say that a student will come up to us and say, after a class, and say, have you got a minute for a question? And then they'll say, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Or I don't believe in God. They offer a question which is going to take an hour or 2 hours of chatting and where there's really a long history behind it. Have you just got a moment? In other words, it's difficult to make the approach. And that's what we see, I think, in the first story, we saw this interesting dichotomy between victim and aggressor, and the difficulty in overcoming that, and the difficulty in approaching. Rabbi Zeira here is trying to, is trying to overcome this and offer opportunity for one person to approach the other, but it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work. And let's take a look at a story where it all goes horribly, horribly wrong. We'll read, this is probably the most shocking story of all this set of stories. So let's take a look at what happens in this particular episode. Here we go. Rav, havale milta bahadiyahi tavcha. Rav had an argument with a certain butcher who had offended Rav. Rav is a great rabbi. By the way, Rav and Shmuel, the first generation of Amoraim in Babel, as we'll see in a couple of minutes, Rav began his career in Eretz Yisrael and later he moved to Babel. And if we know that Rav was like one of the, you know, he was one of the Gedolei Hador in Babel, I imagine when you have somebody of that stature, he frequently has some rough interactions with people. I wonder whether Rav and this butcher, who knows, did he take away his kashrut license? Why did they have an argument? Maybe they had a halachic argument and the butcher thought, doesn't tell us what the argument was about. And the butcher yelled at Rav and said, you know, I don't want to hear your halachic. I don't know what happened. Rav had an argument with a certain butcher who had offended Rav. Lo atel kame. And the butcher never came to apologize to Rav. So who have we got a situation? The Mishnah says, if you've offended somebody, if you yelled at somebody, go and apologize. The butcher is not coming to apologize. So b'mali yom kippure, ama ihu ezil ana lefiyuse. On the eve of Yom Kippur, Rav says, I'm going to go and appease him. In other words, Rav doesn't want to go, maybe there's a public argument, and Rav doesn't want to go into Yom Kippur with an argument with somebody. So he says, you know what, I know that I was yelled at, but I'm going to be generous enough, I'm going to go and talk it out with him. Right? In other words, the offender doesn't always need to come, maybe the offended party will come. Rav Huna, and now here, by the way, here's a very interesting piece of the story, which we'll come back to. Rav Huna met him, and he said, where is my master going? Where's Rav going? And he said, I'm going to make up with the butcher. And Rav Huna said, Abba, right? Abba is the name that they called Rav. Rav Huna said to himself, Abba is going to go and kill that man. I'll leave that and let you think about it. Rav went and he stood over the man. Okay? In Hebrew it says, Azal he went, Vakam ilave. He stood over him. I assume he stands over him because the man is working and he's sitting down at a table. And Rav stood up above him. But I think there's something important in this story, which is that Rav is, of course, the scholar. He's the Gadol Hador. And this man is a butcher, a simple man, maybe, you know, a blue-collar worker, let's call it. There's definitely a dissonance in class between Rav, the Gadol Hador, and the butcher. So he says, Rav went and he stood over him, and the slaughterer was seated and splitting open the head of an animal. How evocative is that? He looked up and he saw Rav, right? Dali Eine, he raised his eyes and he saw him and he said, Abba at zil, let li miltam hadach. Abba, get out of here. I have no dealings with you. I don't want to talk to you. Bahadi de kapali reshe, and as he was slitting the animal's head, his stomach garma, a bit of the skull got loose, umachye bekue the cutle. And it let fly, and he struck the butcher's neck and killed him. Wow, what a story, okay? What do you make of this story, okay? Now, I want to look at this story, and first of all, I hope that everybody realizes, obviously, this is a very unfortunate situation, right? We mentioned before, it's difficult to approach somebody. And here, Rav, who's the offended party, it seems like, right, the offended party, thinks that he'll go and be very generous and make up with this man. But this man doesn't want to see him at all. It's not like Rabbi Zera who walked around in the equivalent here. Rabbi Zera would walk around in the Bet Midrash and the other guy would leave. He's so offended, he doesn't want Rav to be anywhere near him, right? Did Rav distract the butcher? Maybe. Rav Huna, who is Rav's student, saw him walking. And he said to him, Rav, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to make up with the butcher. And he says to himself, oh my God, Rav's going to kill somebody. What's that all about? What did he see? What did he know? What's going on? Carol says, so maybe Rav Huna sensed that Rav wouldn't be successful. He knew the butcher's personality. The butcher was a butcher personality, and he was a tough guy, right? And he was really tough, and he wasn't going to forgive easily. Maybe people in the community who had visited the butcher knew that any time they mentioned Rav's name, he said, I never accept Rav's heksher. I hate Rav. And they knew that he was still furious with him, and this was unresolved, right? Or here's another possibility, right? Listen to this. Maybe it's possible that Rav Huna, Rav thinks he's going to reconcile with him, but Rav Huna can see the way. I'd love to film this. How was Rav walking? What was the look on his face? You know, sometimes, you know, why does Rav clearly is caught up in this, and it's bothering him, and it's Erev Yom Kippur. And as much as he thinks the butcher needs to apologize, Rav has also got involved in something. In other words, who's going to make the first move? Maybe Rav's irritated that he has to make the first move. Maybe there's still some residual anger that Rav has. I wonder whether Rav Huna saw on Rav's face much more aggression than Rav thought he had. Have you ever been in a situation where you are talking to somebody and they say, why are you yelling? And you go, I'm not yelling, right? I'm not yelling, right? In other words, you don't realize how much aggression you have. Maybe Rav was striding with an aggression. He was caught up in the difficulty of the situation and didn't realize that if he would suddenly appear in the butcher's shop and the butcher would see him, the butcher wouldn't see this as an act of reconciliation. The butcher would actually see this as an act of aggression. And maybe there was almost a look, maybe there was something about Rav's walk, Rav's face, maybe his muscles, his body language that, made things much more difficult. Whichever way, right? The butcher is not ready to receive Rav. And this ends tragically. This man who maybe is a very physical man, this butcher rather than the scholar, right? Right? Susanna says facial expressions are misinterpreted, right? Rav felt a need to make peace before Rosh Hashanah, but maybe the man wasn't ready for it. Maybe it needed to wait another year or another year or another year. So here we see a great example. The Mishnah says, go and make up with somebody, right? But it ain't so simple. People aren't necessarily ready to receive you. Maybe you think you're approaching somebody in a sense of conciliation, but the person actually perceives your approach as a moment of aggression. Maybe that's where those other 10 people come in. Other people need to make the peace. Maybe Rav Huna shouldn't have said it to himself, but maybe he should have spoken to Rav and say, Rebbe, with all due respect, you know the guy hates you. This is not going to be good, right? I mean, listen to what he says to himself. Rav is going to kill somebody, right? And whether it was a metaphor or whatever it was, right? Yes, and he's saying that maybe Rav Huna understood that the class difference and that by standing over him, and maybe there's sort of this vertical dichotomy, right? The very presence of the great rabbi unannounced in the butcher shop would startle the butcher, and the butcher would be lost for words, lost for emotions, right? Maybe you need to, maybe sometimes we need an intercessor. We need somebody to be a mediator, right? A mediator can sometimes be a great thing to test the waters and to check. You know, somebody said before, what happens if somebody stops talking to you and you don't even know why, right? And maybe sometimes we need somebody to intercede. We need a third party who can go along and pave the way. I once heard a lecture about mediation. And they said that was exactly right. Sharon's correct. This is a great lesson on how not to make peace. But I even say more than that. It's a great lesson on how not to follow the Mishnah. That sometimes following the halacha doesn't work. It can go horribly wrong. And the art of mediation is actually indeed about that. You get a third party who can talk to each side, understand what's really offend them, help each party see the perspective of the other one, and bring the idea of mediation is actually that the two parties do not meet each other. There's too much aggression, there's too much bad blood between them, and the two parties do not meet each other initially. And the mediator manages to evoke certain areas of compassion, certain areas of understanding, and goes in some sort of shuttle diplomacy back and forth, until at the end of the mediation process, the two can meet, but only after you've sort of prepared the groundwork. So this is, again, a fascinating story. And let's go to story number four, okay? And here, let's, yes, Tova's correct. Aaron was Ohev Shalom v'Rodei Shalom, and he was a mediator. And in fact, in the Midrash about Aaron, how he used to be an Ohev Shalom v'Rodei Shalom, they actually talk about Aaron doing exactly that. It says, he went to this one and he said, your friend's upset. And he went to the other one and he said, your friend's upset. And that Aaron's role was actually finding a way to teach, talk to each different side before they actually met to achieve some sense of conciliation. And when they actually met, they would hug and make peace with one another. That's how we see the situation. Let's read the fourth story again. Not a great story. Jerry's asking a question. Why did Rav think that Rav was going to kill the butcher? Rav said to appease the butcher, right? It indicates apology or mediation, not violence. So I agree with that. I think that what Rav Huna knows something about the situation, and that's why I offered two options. By the way, he said, that Rav is going to kill somebody. I don't know whether he's going to kill himself or kill somebody, but I would say this, that I think one of two options, either he knew that the butcher would not be receptive, or alternatively, he knew that Rav was looking more aggressive than even Rav himself realized. So I think that's why he says Rav's going to kill somebody. Rav thinks he's being conciliatory, but with the way I look at it, right, it isn't, right? And I think Elisheva's comment is a good one. Apology is an act of vulnerability and seeing things from another's perspective. Standing over the butcher means that there's this sense of superiority. You have to be very, 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 very careful. It's very delicate. All right, let's read the last story, and maybe an early story about Rav. Story number four. Rav have a pasik sidra kamei de Rebbe. This is an earlier story when Rav wasn't yet a Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav wasn't yet a Gadol Ador. And Rav is in Rebbe's yeshiva. He's not the teacher, is actually Rebbe. And now we've got all the students, but for some reason, Rav, one of the students, maybe a learned student, is learning the Sidra, right? The Parshat Shavua in front of Rebbe. In entered Rabbi Chia, late for Shir, Hadala Reshe. So he went back to the beginning of the Shir. In came Bar Kapara. He went back to the beginning of the Shir. In came Rabbi Shimon Barebi. And again, he returned to the middle of beginning of the Shir. In came Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama. And suddenly Rav blurts out and says, Kuli hai ner davar nezal. How many times do I have to go back to the beginning of my Shir? And lo hadar. So in other words, we have a situation where Rav is giving a Shir. Rav isn't the Rebbe here. Rebbe is the Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. But he starts his teaching. Bar Kapara comes in. This is, by the way, a classic literary motif for 3 and 4. Rabbi Chia comes in, and Rav starts again from the beginning. Bar Kapara comes in, it's fine. Rabbi Shimon comes in, he starts again. But when Rabbi Chanina ben Chama comes in, he not only doesn't he go back to the beginning of the Shir, but he says, how many times do I have to start again? Rabbi Chanina was offended. For 13 years, these two people learned in the same Bet Midrash. It says here, Rav went in on 13 eves of Yom Kippur, right? Azal Rav legabei tleis amale di Yom Kippure v'lo ifayas. So in other words, every year Rav said to him, I know I offended you 10 years ago. I know I offended you 11 years ago. I know I offended you 13 years ago. But Rabbi Chanina would not be reconciled. The Gemara asks the question now, and says, why did Rav go 13 times? Didn't Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina say, whoever takes pardon of his neighbor doesn't need to do it more than 3 times? Answer is, Rav was different. In other words, Rav was so bothered by an argument that he didn't listen to that law. He went 3 times and 4 times and 5 times and he kept on going. He wanted to go beyond the letter of the law. And then they say, but how could Rabbi Chanina act so unforgivingly? Hadn't Rebbe said that one who passes over his rights, all his transgressions are forgiven, right? It says, didn't Rava say, in other words, one should be forgiving. If you're forgiving, Hashem will forgive you. And here we're going to see the big shock of the whole story. Rather, Rabbi Hanina had seen in a dream that Rav was being hung on a palm tree. And since the tradition is that one who is in a dream, is hanged on a palm tree, will become the head of the academy, he concluded the authority will be given to him and he wouldn't be pacified. And in the end, he departed to teach Torah in Babylon. This is a sort of complicated thing. So let me try and explain what's really happening here. The story goes like this. He went for, 13 years and he wouldn't be appeased. So the Gemara says, why is Rav keep on apologizing? Okay, he's really into apologizing. But why doesn't Rabbi Hanina forgive? And the Gemara says something shocking. Rabbi Hanina had a dream and he saw Rav hanging on a palm tree. And in the almanac of dreams, what that means is if you're hanging on a palm tree is very tall, a very tall tree, a very regal tree. It means you're going to become the next Rosh Yeshiva. In other words, the question is, we've got all these students, all these very scholarly students. There may be Ramim in the yeshiva, their teachers in the yeshiva, right? Who's going to become the next Rosh Yeshiva? And Rabbi Hanina had a dream that Rav was going to become the next Rosh Yeshiva. And that's why he would never forgive him. So I'm proposing, why? Because he's becoming the next Rosh Yeshiva, why won't you forgive him? And that's a great question. Any idea from anyone? So I think there are two possible ways of reading this. One is possibly that he thought that Rav didn't have the character to be a Rosh Yeshiva, right? But David says here that there's a certain jealousy here, possibly. In other words, Rabbi Hanina didn't forgive him because Rav was his competitor. Rabbi Hanina, right, has something in for Rav because really they're both in a competition with one another and Rabbi Hanina is not going to let go. They both want to be Rosh Yeshiva. They both want to be the best Rebbe in the Yeshiva. They both want to have the greatest number of people in his shir. And there's a competition between them, right? It's a famous story of Agnon, Shtei Talmidei Chachamim Shahayu Be'ireinu, two scholars who are in our town about a bitter dispute between two scholars. I mean, sometimes it happens in the academic community. Sometimes it happens in all sorts of communities that you have professional rivalries. And essentially what the Gemara is saying is that, you know what, Rabbi Hanina really should have. So it's possible he wanted to teach Rav a lesson. Rav, don't offend students anymore. But why are you in that position to teach Rav a lesson, right? The answer is, I think that the Gemara is saying that something was going on in Rabbi Hanina's subconscious. He couldn't let the argument go because really he wanted to get ahead. I know that sounds shocking. I know that sounds, but you know what? People are people. People are people. And sometimes we won't forgive because something in our subconscious, I don't know, because what he did reminded me of a boss I once had who was abusive. And I'm not going to let him get away with that. Or, in other words, by all modes of reason, right? By all modes of reason, Rabbi Hanina should have forgiven Rav, but something was stuck there. They were competitors. And at some level, he wanted to make Rav feel uncomfortable. By the way, the Gemara says he made him feel so uncomfortable. This bothered Rav so much that in the end, Rav felt unwelcome in the yeshiva and Rav left and went to Bavel and he became a Rosh Yeshiva there. He couldn't stand this bitter competition with Rabbi Hanina. He couldn't stand the tension every time they passed in the hallway, right? And as Steve writes here, right, what blocks the path to offering forgiveness? Jealousy, feelings of low esteem. In other words, Rabbi Hanina actually has low esteem. Ruth says, big egos. Yes, you know, here's the irony. Sometimes it's small people who act in a bullyish way, right? In other words, people who have problems with their self-esteem, right, cannot forgive. So what have we seen? Okay, what have we seen in this story? And I'm going to try and sum up because I see our time is coming to a close. Interesting. So Jay's saying a machloket l'shem shemayim never ends. It's sofol itkayim, right? I don't. I think this is actually a machloket shelo l'shem shemayim, right?
I was trying to say I'm sorry. It's a little bit of a joke, but it's true. When the machloket is l'shem shemayim, where the issues are deep religious issues, so it never ends. It's sofol itkayim. The passion is so great. Those arguments take on a much greater thing. And all the stories with the rabbis, because the issues were so strong, the debate is so strong. I'm okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem whatsoever. So let me try. I'm going to try and summarize, and then maybe people can offer a couple of closing comments. We learned a Mishnah, which seems like it's pretty simple. And the Mishnah is basically saying that if you've offended somebody, God's not going to forgive you till you make up with them. This was amplified by the Gemara, where the Gemara said, you're trapped, don't think that you are, you've offended somebody, that they're the ones who's the victim. You're both as much victims as each other. You're also trapped because you haven't yet resolved the dispute. The victim is trapped by the offense, but you're trapped by the guilt. So go have it out with him. And if you need to bring other people, bring three lots of three people, you don't need to apologize more than three times. And even if somebody dies, you can still offer an apology. But now the Gemara is telling us that's all lovely. And you can write your Shulchan Aruch and tell you exactly how to apologize. But it's way more complicated than that. Some people are going to be pacing up and down the street. They're going to be standing with their phone in hand. And they can't make the phone call on Sunday. And they can't make it on Monday. And they can't make it on Tuesday. Because, they're worried that the person will just simply block their phone call or something like that. It's difficult to go because when I apologize, I'm putting myself in a vulnerable position. And it's difficult to do that. And I don't know how I'll be received. And maybe the argument will reopen. It'll become even more ugly. And I'll say, I was sorry. And I'll say, yeah, but are you really sorry? And do you know how much damage you caused? And do you know how much stress I'm under? And it'll never end, right? Now, Rav Zeira try to put himself in an available situation so that when he knew that somebody had been bad to him, that he'd come and apologize. And it worked for Rabbi Zera. But for Rav, it totally boomeranged. For Rav, it went horribly wrong. So much so that this sort of like butcher ended up manhandling this skull and a bone came out and killed him. And that was a situation where argument was really, intractable. And he hadn't paved the way for it. And sometimes we even suggest that possibly you go in order to try and reconcile. You don't realize how much possibly hidden aggression you have. Maybe you think that he's the aggressor and you're the victim, but maybe he thinks. How many times have you been in a situation where you say, could you please apologize? And they go, can I apologize? Can you apologize? When you have an argument with somebody, it's not true that there's only an aggressor and a victim, an offender and maybe both people look at the other one as the offender. And therefore Rav thought that the butcher was the offender, but the butcher thought that Rav was the offender, right? And in the last story, Rav is desperate to get Rabbi Hanina's forgiveness year after year after year. When he doesn't get it, he leaves. He leaves the yeshiva. He really doesn't like, Rav clearly doesn't like being in argument situations, but Rabbi Hanina won't forgive. And here, Rabbi Hanina has, as you say, a juk barosh. He's got a mental block. He's got a mental block, and the mental block relates to his competitiveness. His mental block relates to ego wars. His mental block relates to maybe something that he's built up in his own mind to a matter of principle, but actually is something that Rabbi Hanina feels threatened by Rav. And because he feels threatened by Rav, he cannot forgive him. And what I really would like to do by teaching this shir is to say that, as with so many things in life, it's really complicated. It's complicated. And, maybe it's good that I'm doing this 2 weeks before Yom Kippur, because maybe we need to realize that if we do have some outstanding interpersonal, issues going on with other people, it's not so simple as to pick up the phone. Maybe sometimes you do need a mediator. Maybe you need a friend to approach them and say, you know, whoever it is would like to phone you, but is that okay? And they'll say, well, oh, they're, I'm never going to talk to them. Oh, yeah, but you know, they're really sorry. Or maybe you just need to rethink a situation and realize you think that you're the offended party, but maybe they think that you offended them. And, you know, sometimes there are things which can fester, but we do believe that Yom Kippur is a time where people's hearts are open to forgiveness. But we've got to realize that sometimes, you know, the hurt is very, very deep. And sometimes people are very tough people. And as Nechama says, yeah, maybe don't leave these conversations to Erev Yom Kippur, right? And maybe it's good I'm giving this 2 weeks before. But maybe sometimes it does take not more than... By the way, sometimes I go back to the Gemara. Sometimes don't feel if there's really a person who's a tough person and won't forgive. The Gemara says you don't need to feel. If you've tried to make every means to approach that person, right? Then, and you've done that 3 times, you've done it properly and done it appropriately. You can't feel trapped by them. They can't hold you in a cycle of guilt, right? You've done what you can do. And yet, really, you know, people are tough sometimes. And this is just maybe a little bit to open our hearts a little bit and to open our minds into the complication here. I love the sensitivity with which the Gemara is saying that it's not just about the apology, but almost as important as the apology, it is the way we go into that apology. It is the mental state, the emotional state, which enables that to happen. So I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. I wish you all a good week. We'll meet again next week. And we'll be talking next week about, you know, when I've done terrible sins, is tshuva possible? That's what we're going to be talking about next week. We're going to be bringing some very interesting examples from Tanakh and from Chazal. So I look forward to meeting you again next week. I hope people won't be too much up to their elbows in cooking and getting ready for Yom Tov, but I'll be here and we'll make time for a bit of Torah learning, to be mechaven our minds and souls to the Amim Noraim. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Yeshua. Okay. Tomorrow, Maishir and Pirkei Avot, where, of course, we talk about how we should avoid these problems, right? The lessons from Pirkei Avot. And on Motzei Shabbos, Menachem Nitag, on the Yud Gimel Midot, a priestly chutzir, 10:30, how God forgives us. So we continue all of Torah's Kulo Torah, Kulo Torah Inyan Achadu. All Torah is interrelated. So please, we look forward to learning with you. And if you're worried about cooking next Thursday morning, I'm giving the shiur next Thursday night on Shofar and Shabbos. So even more cooking, but okay, Beseder. Shiurim, of course, all next week. And then picking up where we left off, and we look forward to seeing all of you. Rabbi Yitzhak, I just comment, if I may, you know, so many of the deep arguments in the Gemara are between great rabbis who were so close to each other. Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, Rav Chista, Rav Huna, Rav Elezer, Rav Gamliel, and you know, it's kind of, you know, tragic what you say, they're human beings, but you see these stories, a little slight, it doesn't even mean it, and wow, for 40 years they don't talk to each other, you know, so I mean, you of course can't touch on all the debates, but you see it often, the closer they were and the greater they were often the debate, the higher you are, the harder you fall.
That's true, and it also it's true that sometimes the, you know, the people we've got to apologize most to the people who, you know, we're close to. And that might mean, you know, parents, spouses, children.
Yeah, of course. We fight with those who are closest to us, of course, of course. That's who's around to fight with. And Corona's making it worse. I mean, there have been a lot of articles. Divorce rates, unfortunately, apparently, you know, family disputes, of course, not to mention all the mental health issues that people deal with. You know, people in cooped up in close quarters. So
with, sure. Sure.
So, I agree. What's cooking? That's it. Learning Torah. We eat Torah. No, but we eat food too. That's it. It's mitzvah to eat in Rosh Hashanah. But yeah, there are less people to cook for this year. Nobody's having any guests. So anyways, but thank you, Rabbi Israel. A pleasure always, and have a Shabbat Shalom, and we look forward to seeing you next week. And
Thank you very
everybody
much.
Everybody before next week. Okay. And everybody invite your friends to join us, and so we can all learn together.